And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
Welcome to another edition of the Awakening Podcast on American Family Radio. I'm your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson. Great to be with you again today. And folks, there is so much to talk about, I don't even know where to start. So before I start, let me say this. Please pray for our country, because it becomes increasingly clear, doesn't it? President Trump can certainly solve some of our political and legal problems. And he's doing a tremendous job at doing that. And by the way, some of our economic problems as well. But it's clear that President Trump cannot solve the spiritual, moral, and cultural problems. It's going to take us, the people of the United States, to get that done. Having a president who agrees with us is certainly a big help, don't get me wrong. But he simply cannot do that job alone. I mean, he can't really do the job of presidency alone. He needs our support. But the spiritual, moral, and cultural issues that are woven into the fabric of our country after, what, at least a generation, maybe two generations, of the left infiltrating our country and attacking the foundations of our nation and indoctrinating people with a false worldview, a Marxist and socialist worldview, it's going to take the people of this country unraveling those threads, exposing them for the evil that they are. I mean, that's how we ended up with Imam Dhani as the likely next mayor of New York, a man who is a Marxist, a socialist, indeed, I'd argue, a communist, a man who is an Islamist. He's a 12er. And the 12ers are frankly, radical Muslims who really believe in the coming of the 12th Mahdi, who is going to establish a worldwide caliphate over the earth. Yeah, I've said before, when I was running for lieutenant governor, the press just wouldn't let up on my spiritual views, particularly as it related to homosexuality. They haven't asked Imam Dhani any of his views. Because, see, if you're a Muslim, you get a pass, which is, again, the anti-Christian hatred and bias and hostility of the mainstream media and the left-wing culture is just unreal. It is unreal, but it is palpable. When I say unreal, I guess I should say very real, but it is palpable, it is tangible, it has real-world effect, and we watch it unfolding all the time. So we've gotten to that point because the cultural mosaic, the Judeo-Christian cultural mosaic that our founding fathers laid and that others have woven through many generations in our country began to be significantly unraveled with the coming of a lot of these European intellects after World War II, and then with the 60s and the attacks on our institutions, on our values, on our way of life. All of that has served to bring us to the point where we are now. And it's going to take the American people, by the grace of God, by the way, by the help of God, to do it. That is why, folks, your support for American Family Radio is so critically important, because American Family Radio is really the premier clarion voice to the body of Christ on our unshakable and uncompromising values. You won't get that anywhere else, not even on conservative outlets. You'll get a little bit of it, but they're not going to take the hard, bold, godly stand that we're going to take here on American Family Radio. We know that God has called us to that. So thank you for your prayers. Thank you for your support. Thank you for the love that you've shown all of us who are working at this network and doing what we can to fulfill God's mission for the network. So God bless each and every one of you. I've got a number of issues, folks, that I've got to deal with today, and I'm going to try by the grace of God to get to every single one of them. Number one, all of you know, I'm sure, that we have a candidate for lieutenant governor, a Republican nominee for lieutenant governor, I should say, who is an open practicing homosexual. We also have a lieutenant governor Republican candidate who is running a write-in campaign, which most people give very, very, very little hope of winning, okay? I say that's not because you can't win a write-in campaign. It's because we don't have the organization and the money behind something like that in order to make that happen. But with enough organization and money and time, that's what you need. You need time, you need organization, you need time, you need money, and you need organization. With those three things in place, I think a write-in campaign could be won, particularly in a situation like this, but I don't think it can be now. Just depending on when you're hearing this, if you're hearing this on Wednesday, the day it's posted, just yesterday I announced that I would not be supporting the Republican candidate for lieutenant governor. Of course, I'm certainly not supporting the Democrat candidate. I'm going to vote for the write-in candidate, who is John Curran. Now, I say all that because I know most of you listening to me are not from Virginia. Some of you are, but most of you are not. But I say all that to make this point. We are going to increasingly find ourselves on the horns of an ethical dilemma because the society has moved to a point now where, according to Pew Research at least, the majority of Americans believe that homosexuality is nothing wrong with it, just fine, which means that even in the Republican Party, you're going to see homosexuals pushed forward. And we as Christians are going to have to determine, can I vote for this person? I met with John Reed. John Reed's a very nice guy. I enjoyed talking to him. He seemed very sincere, but he's very wrong and very misguided on his sexuality and on his sexual behavior. He just is. And because the Bible so roundly condemns homosexuality as sin, I cannot vote for a person who says, I am an open practicing homosexual and I'm proud of that and I don't have any remorse or repentance, or I'm not struggling with that. That's who I am. I can't vote for a person like that. So there is a write-in candidate. He may have very little chance, but I'm going to vote for him. The argument that I had made, which I hope will resonate with you, is this. You see, we as Christians cannot take responsibility for the outcome of elections, and we certainly don't take responsibility for the outcome of human history. All we can take responsibility for is our own integrity. That's it. And I've said, I could not get behind this microphone, frankly, and come to you after having made clear what the Bible teaches about homosexuality and the damage it's doing to our country, and then say, but I voted for a guy who's a homosexual because the other candidate was so much worse. I couldn't do that. And because the other candidate is so much worse, and I think this is what I have to do in order to benefit the Commonwealth of Virginia. Well, you see, my responsibility to the Commonwealth of Virginia is to act with integrity, not to do whatever is necessary to control the outcome. Because if I do that, I'm becoming just like leftists by any means necessary. And just like all those Christians who vote Democrat, claim to be Christians who vote Democrat, well, because they're going to give us racial justice, they're going to give us social justice. I might not agree with abortion, but, I mean, I'd be just like them. And I'm not going there. So I've recommended to people that, you know, and I'm not going to be mad with anybody, they have to make their own decision and do what they feel gives them a clear conscience in answering to God. But my recommendation is vote for the write-in candidate, pray for John Reed's deliverance from homosexuality, and pray for the Commonwealth of Virginia that God will use whatever the outcome to promote righteousness in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Now, I think that's relevant for those of you who live outside of Virginia because it's coming to you. And probably Christians in New York, but few there are facing the same dilemma with this upcoming election. Do they vote for an Islamist and a Muslim 12er? Because this guy is in agreement with Iran. I mean, this is the guy who says, as mayor, when Benjamin Netanyahu comes to New York, he's going to have him arrested. on what? I mean, what authority does he have as a mayor to arrest a sitting prime minister of a sovereign nation? Well, it just goes to show the level of hatred and anti-Semitism that he has for Jewish people and for Israel. How in the world could people vote for somebody like that? Well, I'll tell you how. They can vote for somebody like that because they've been brainwashed and indoctrinated into thinking that somehow this is a good thing. I said it's been at least a generation, maybe two, when you come right down to it. Some of these colleges and universities are resisting President Trump's call that they be more balanced because, frankly, they're wholly given over to demonism. A lot of these institutions, folks, are demonic. And what little academic work takes place there is a sideshow. It's a footnote. Because most of what's taking place is demonic indoctrination into Marxists, socialists, seculars, atheists, godless points of view. And they're the ones who produce these automatons who will go out and vote for somebody like Mamdani, who really represents the same kind of people who would chop their head off of a homosexual to throw them off roofs. And they'll go vote for them. Because if you're really going to be a good comrade, that's what you do. So I'm not compromising, okay? I'm not voting for John Reed. I'm voting for John Curran. And you know, I've raised this issue. I said, so suppose John Reed were a married heterosexual, living with his wife, raising a wonderful family, conservative on all the issues, except that he was not pro-life. Would you still say, well, I'm going to vote for him anyway because? See, this is the dilemma. See, my answer is very clear. No, I would not. I'm not voting for anybody who's not pro-life. Or what if he were conservative on all the issues except he was completely committed to gun control? Would you say, well, I know he's pro-gun control and he wants to gut the Second Amendment, but I'm going to vote on him for him because he's conservative on all the other issues. I wouldn't. Because to me, the Second Amendment protects all the others. If we don't have a right to defend ourselves against criminality and tyranny, we are not free. So, no, I wouldn't vote for it. Yeah, but what about if the other candidate was so much worse? But again, that's in the hands of God. In fact, Reverend Johnny Hunter called my National Awakening call today and agreed with me and said, look, you could make the same argument about the last election when President Trump was defeated. They cheated. We didn't. Maybe we should have cheated. We'd have been better off to cheat and win. Well, we didn't cheat. They cheated. I don't care what anybody says. They cheated. They made up all kinds of new stuff with COVID. And I mean, even if you can't prove out and out election fraud, the irregularities were so stark that anybody who denies that things happened in that election that were not legitimate is lying to themselves and lying to everybody else as well. You know, the unguarded drop boxes and the mail-in ballots and the discovered ballots and stopping the count while people are watching them, resuming the count when nobody is watching, and all this nonsense that went on. But we didn't cheat. And I said, I wouldn't cheat to win an election. Yeah, but what if the person that you were up against or that was on the ballot on the other side was so terrible that you just couldn't allow them to get elected? I still wouldn't cheat. Because you see, again, the outcome of human history is in God's hands. The only thing I can do is act with integrity before God for what he calls me to do. And then count on and rely upon God to correct whatever programs and plans might go awry as a result of my having acted with integrity. Reverend Johnny Hunter made this point. He said, President Trump not getting elected may have been the best thing to happen. And he's right. See, The Bible says in Ephesians 1:11 that he works all things according to the counsel of his will. And in Romans 8:28, it says, we know that all things work together for good for those who love the Lord and are called according to his purpose. We've got to count on that. And then we, you and I do what is right. You know, George Washington said, all we can do is lift up a standard to which good and honest men can repair. The rest is in the hands of God. Do what is good. Do what is honest. Do what is right. And then leave the rest in the hands of God. So there you go. Let me move on. So that's where I am. If you're in Virginia, you know where I stand. I'll leave you to the Lord what you do. But my recommendation is a write-in vote. And I think we probably ought to be thinking a lot more about how we make the most of circumstances like this for a candidate who is a write-in candidate, for example, when we don't have other choices that are acceptable to us. So we don't have another choice that's acceptable to us. All right, let me come to the government shutdown now. First of all, I've said many, many times, if you want to understand the Democrat Party, don't look for facts, don't look for logic, and don't look for truth. Don't look for facts, don't look for logic, don't look for truth. If you want to understand the Democrat Party, here's what you look for. The pathway to power. That's what you look for. The pathway to power. By the way, don't look for compassion and concern about people either, because that's not part of their equation. Oh, that's a part of their facade. They throw that up. Oh, we're so concerned about people. We're so compassionate. Yeah, but that's a lie. They're not. They're only concerned about people when that expressed concern either helps them to obtain or to keep the power they so desperately crave. Now, here's another example of it. Now, we've been doing continuing resolutions for as long as I've been following politics. And by the way, I don't always like them either. And to truth be told, I never liked them because I want to see us do a balanced budget. I want to see us put our spending in order. But a continuing resolution basically continues spending on the same basis as the prior, I think it's quarter. And you just continue that spending. And then you can negotiate on other things. You can negotiate on the budget. You can negotiate on appropriations bills that maybe are scheduled to come before the House. You can work on that. Democrats have been doing that for as long as I can remember. They've been doing it. They got a track record of doing it. All of a sudden, they don't want to do that. They want to add $1.5 trillion to the budget so that they can fund the health care of illegal aliens. And when they lie and say they don't want to fund the health care of illegal aliens, you know, how do you know they're lying? Their lips are moving. Because folks, let's just be clear. These people could care less about illegal aliens having health care. But this is their new adopted constituency. And they want to make sure that these people know that they are taking care of them so that when the time comes that they finally finagle them and crowbar them into being able to vote, they will vote for Democrats and keep them in power with the reminder, we're the ones who took care of you. We're the ones who are going to keep taking care of you. And if you'll simply be our slaves, yeah, I said it because that's what it boils down to. If you will simply be our slaves, we will. Look, we'll get you. We'll get you out of jail if you commit a crime. We'll keep you out of jail even after you've committed a crime and been convicted of the crime. We'll get your relatives here, you know, from other countries. We'll somehow sneak them in here. We'll do whatever we need to. You sneak them in. We'll protect them once you get them in. We'll give you health care. We'll give you all kinds of freebies. We'll take care of you. All you've got to do is keep us in power. Now, folks, they've made a calculation that a government shutdown, even though it affects millions of people, is to their political benefit. They don't care about the people not getting paychecks. They don't care about the diminished safety factors in our air traffic control system. They don't care about any of that. What they care about is that this may help us get where we want to go in terms of somehow misguidedly, they think maybe winning in the midterms, A, but B, long term, making sure that our new constituency of illegal aliens is absolutely inextricably tied to us so that we can always count on them, just like we've counted on black voters. We do nothing for them. We could care less about them, but we've got them so emotionally tied up with the whole racial stuff that, and they look, they'd vote for us as we're pushing them off the cliff. Yeah, you know, you pushing black people right off the cliff and say, don't forget to vote for me, and having them say, don't worry, I won't before I hit bottom. I know that. But folks, it's just about that bad. It really is. They perpetuate poverty. They perpetuate crime. They perpetuate poor education. They perpetuate government dependence. And they get rewarded for it. They push all these sexually deviant ideologies on our children. They kill 36% of the babies aborted in America are born to pregnant black women, who are only 6% of the population, and yet 36% of the abortions performed in America are performed on black women. So that is a genocide, and they get rewarded for it. So my little analogy of pushing them off the cliff and saying, don't forget to vote for me, and having them say, I will, before I hit bottom, don't worry. That's a pretty accurate description of what's happening. So this government shut down. The Republicans need to hold fast. And by the way, Republicans need to get spending under control too. So I am glad, and I really do pray. Folks, I'm serious about this. We are $38 trillion in debt. You can't continue to do that without eventually hitting the wall. And I hope President Trump slashes the budget. I hope they go in there and slash that budget and cut jobs out and cut programs. And look, I'm not trying to be heartless toward people who work for the government, but you know what the reality is, folks? We've got too many people working for the government. I think we got about 3 million people working for the federal government. 3 million. Sometimes I feel like about 2.9 million of them are working up in Northern Virginia. And I'd certainly like to get rid of them in terms of moving them. Yeah, you know, you got to qualify things these days because the left is so full of hatred and violence, and they've so changed the atmosphere that you got to I mean moving them geographically. You know, I mean moving them out of our state. Oh, what a blessing that would be to Virginia, folks. That would make keeping Virginia solidly red an easy task. What's made it so hard is all these government deep state bureaucrats up in Northern Virginia who are basically just skewing the state and trying to turn the state of George Washington, I've said, into the state of Karl Marx. But as far as I'm concerned, Republicans need to hold fast. I think it's Richard Vaught. I think he's the director of White House Management and Budget. Keep cutting, brother. Keep cutting. So, look, I mean, we don't want to see anybody suffer, but all of us are going to suffer if we don't get the spending under control. Now, let me address something, folks, that I really haven't heard any prominent Republican address to the extent that it really needs to be addressed, and I'm going to do that. I don't know whether you caught the story, and again, I don't know how far this story goes. I don't know all the ins and outs. I've heard some justifications, and I've heard some suggestions that this story may to some extent be exaggerated, or there may be to some extent parts of it that have been manufactured. But I haven't heard anybody deny the essence of the story. And the essence of the story is that leaders of young Republican groups around the country have been on a Telegram chat for quite some time, using all kinds of slurs against black folks, Jewish folks, and I mean, you name it, just really talking nasty. And one of these people, his name is, in fact, some of them had to resign. It had just been, you know, their positions are no longer tenable after this came out. Well, while they were saying these things, and some of it's been printed in a variety of articles. Again, I don't think Republicans have addressed it adequately, but making references to Jews going to the gas chamber, and, you know, in other words, jokes about it. Making fun of black folks, some watching basketball is the equivalent of watching a bunch of monkeys in the zoo. One guy said, "I love Hitler." Joe Maligno, who identified himself as the general counsel for New York State Republicans, said, "Can we fix the showers? Gas chambers don't fit the Hitler aesthetic." That was in response to one guy saying, "We can pretend like we're going to give them showers. Say, hey, come on in, take a shower and relax." Boom, they're dead. Now, again, it may be that this is a small number, but what I haven't heard is strong objections by the many people who are on this Telegram chat saying, "This is wrong and I'm not going to be a part of it. This is wrong. I'm not going to be a part of it. Count me out." These, again, are young Republicans. Now, let me say a couple things. You all know that I've been active in the Republican Party and met a lot of Republicans around the country, and I have dealt with Republicans from all backgrounds, and I've campaigned among young Republicans. Now, this is a general observation, so don't go too far with it, but it is a general observation. My observation is that older Republicans, okay, older Republicans who are active in the party, tend to be more Christian in their orientation, if not just outright Christians. I mean, sometimes I would be campaigning, folks, and I'd be speaking at a particular place, and somebody would say, "Well, can we have a word of prayer?" And prayer would break out into a hymn, and I mean, it would end up being a full-blown worship time. I am not exaggerating. But when I campaigned with young Republicans, my observation was that they tended to be much, much more libertarian. Forgive me for using this word, it's a little bit strong, but much more at least prone to a sort of hedonistic approach. I don't think I was ever, well, I can't say ever. Let's put it this way. It was rare to be invited to a Republican event in a bar. Now, a restaurant bar, sure. You know, a restaurant that has a bar in it, sure. But a Republican event in a bar, I maybe once or twice, maybe a handful of times, but I can't remember any time off the top of my head. But I'll tell you what, often young Republican events were in bars. Now, you say what you will about that. I don't drink, and my campaign would not pay for alcohol for anybody. I got some complaints not complaints, but some staff saying, well, that was might hurt us. I said, well, too bad, because I'm not serving anybody alcohol. I mean, we have some events in hotels, and people say, well, there is a paid bar if they really want to go drink. I say, well, there you go. We can't stop them from knowing that, but we're not paying for it. I don't know to what extent Charlie Kirk's impact extends to young Republicans, but what we heard from these young Republicans on this particular chat certainly does not reflect the spirit of what we were hearing and what we are hearing from Turning Point USA and Turning Point Faith. So I want to put this out there. This is my view. Number one, this is why I am not a diehard, absolute, you know, sort of the Republican Party, no matter what. No. Because the Republican Party is not a Christian party. The Republican Party has a lot of Christians in it, thank God, and those Christians do influence its platform, thank God. But the party itself is just a political machine. It's just a political organization. And it, frankly, it can be prone to do the same thing that Democrats will do, which is just follow the path of least resistance and go wherever you need to go in order to get power. And this is just another indication of why I don't have any absolute loyalty to the Republican Party. Now, don't get me wrong. I can't imagine the circumstances in which I would ever vote for a Democrat, ever, ever. But I can see a circumstance in which maybe I might vote for somebody in the Constitution Party. We don't have those in Virginia, but in the Constitution Party, or, you know, I even toyed with the idea at one point of starting a Christian party. But if there were such a thing of voting for a Christian party, I don't feel absolutely tied to the Republican Party. I am committed to the Republican Party insofar as it reflects the values that I hold dear. And when it does not reflect those values, I am either going to turn elsewhere or I'm just going to sit it out. And I would say to these young Republicans or old Republicans or whichever Republicans, if you are enamored of Nazism, if you think that this open and aggressive racist rhetoric is something that you desire, go form a party that reflects that and see how far you get. See, folks, I am absolutely convinced, having had the privilege of traveling all over this nation. See, I've been to every state in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and every state in the United States of America, and spoken in most of them, talked to people in most of them. I am absolutely convinced that the American people are over it, that the American people are not racist, that they don't care about skin color. That's a part of our history, in my view, foisted on the American people by the slave master class that needed a racial ideology to convince people that it was okay to enslave blacks. But most Americans didn't benefit from that. They were just kind of roped into it because the people who had the money and the influence were telling them, yeah, this is good, this is fine, this is great, this works, this is right for America. And when finally it reached an ultimate impasse, which it was inevitable that it would, it ended up in a civil war. So for those people who say America is systemically racist now, how can America be systemically racist when we fought a civil war to end slavery? Because on that basis, then you'd have to say that America is systemically non-racist, because there are many Americans who gave their lives to end slavery. And I know that's not what everybody fought in the Civil War from the Northern side to do, but there were many who did fight in the Civil War because they thought that slavery was inherently wrong and that it needed to be brought to an end. And I say that in the same breath that I say, and there were many people in the South who weren't fighting for slavery. They weren't fighting because they thought that slavery was a good thing or a right thing. They were fighting because they really felt that their state had the right to govern its own affairs and that the federal government didn't have the right to tell them what to do. And their loyalty to their state at that point superseded their loyalty to the United States of America. I believe that's changed now. For most states, except these leftist states, apparently that has not changed for California or Illinois or Maryland or Oregon or Washington. Some of these states, these are de facto secessionist states who have decided they don't have to obey federal law and they don't have to cooperate with federal agents. They can do whatever they want to do because they're sovereign states in and of themselves and in their own right, which is just, again, that's the same attitude that led to the Civil War, folks. So, look, I'd say if that's the way you think, get out of the Republican Party and go start your little pseudo-Nazi party, go start your little pseudo-racist party, whatever party you want, go do something else. Don't pollute the Republican Party with that nonsense, with that stupidity. And because that stuff is born of godlessness. And the people who think that way and talk that way are on their way to hell. They need deliverance. Okay. Now let's talk about this No Kings rally. You know, the irony, folks, and everybody with a brain has pointed this out. So I'm not claiming some brilliant insight myself. I think my son might have been the first person to say this to me. How can there be a king when you are out holding open air rallies, speaking freely against the one you claim to be a king, and he's not having you arrested, he's not having you stopped, he's not shutting you down, he's not shutting you up, and you do that and then you go home. And you stand up on a soapbox and raise up your fist and say, this is what democracy looks like. Well, wait a minute, I thought we had a king. A monarchy is not a democracy. If you're saying we have a king, you're saying we become a monarchy. But you're standing up on a soapbox screaming out, this is what democracy looks like, and nobody's stopping you. Hey, these people are so silly that they're stepping on their own tails. They can't get out of their own way. They're just that stupid. You know, it reminds me of that analogy. They are so far behind that they think they're ahead. You know? They are so far behind in the race that they think they're out front. As it reminds me of the statement, you know, there is no such thing as absolute truth. Which is a statement that collapses in on itself, because if that's true, then the statement you made is inherently not true. So where are you left? With nothing. You know where you left? You can't really say anything. You can't make any categorical statements. You know what they call that? Dumb. And that's exactly what these leftists are. Out having all these rallies, but we don't. Now, I'll tell you what I like to, but I think it was Jonas Clark who coined this. During the Revolutionary War, Jonas Clark, the famous pastor who helped lead troops in the Revolutionary War and was known by some of the founding fathers and signers of the Declaration of Independence, who said, no king but Jesus, no sovereign but God. Now, I'm down with that, you know, but I don't believe that that's what President Trump is aspiring to be either. As I wouldn't quite say it the way he did, but I really believe that President Trump is working just like George Washington did to assure the liberty and the prosperity and the peace and the stability of the American people. Look, President Trump is not, it's accusing him of sending, when he sends the National Guard into these cities, he's militarizing our cities. No, he's stabilizing our cities. He's trying to end the chaos and the anarchy and the violence and the bloodshed and the lawlessness. He's not militarizing them, he's stabilizing them. But of course, these people are so full of hatred for the American people, for the American way of life, for the ICE agents who are doing nothing more than enforcing the law. Did you hear about this idiot judge who's got the nerve to say that ICE agents in the Chicago area can be arrested at the courthouse? Now, why would you arrest a federal agent at the courthouse? But that's what they're saying. That's what this judge is saying, that you can arrest an ICE agent at the courthouse. For doing what? Oh, if he tries to arrest a non-citizen without a warrant. Well, to my knowledge, you don't need a warrant. If you've got a deportation order, or you can prove that the person is not a citizen, you don't need a warrant to apprehend them. I mean, you mean to tell me, we've probably got folks, remember you kept hearing that we have 11 million illegal migrants. No, correction. We have 11 million undocumented citizens. Yeah, undocumented citizens. Again, oh, Lord have mercy. Folks, this stuff will just, it'll drive you up the wall. So the way these people play with language, you know what? You know, the number probably is, I guarantee you, the number is 30 to 35 million. I guarantee you the number is 30 to 35 million. I had one of my church members telling me about a section not far from our church, he said, which has been wholly taken over by people of Spanish-speaking descent who cannot speak English. It has been wholly taken over. Barbershops, laundromats, little places where they're serving that constituency only because they only speak Spanish. They're little Spanish enclaves. Folks, it's 30 to 35 million. You know, I think for the first time in our history, I think we've got close to 50 million people in our country who were not born in America. 50 million people who were not born here. And I guarantee a lot of those people, 30 to 35 million of those people, are illegal aliens who have come here illegally. Now, about 1.2 million, I think, have self-deported, given the Trump crackdown. He's deported, I think, about another 500,000. So we're not even at the 2 million mark. And we probably got 30 to 35 million illegal aliens in the country. Joe Biden brought in 10 million. Some people argue it's 15, 20 million. I don't think anybody, we don't have any way of knowing because the people who didn't come to a checkpoint, all the gotaways, we don't have any way of knowing how many of those people came into our country. You know, it is sad that we've reached a point in our country where people want us to celebrate lawlessness. I've not heard one critic of President Trump's policy say he is violating the law. You know what they say? Oh, well, he's arresting non-criminals too. Well, if they're not here legally, they don't have a right to be here. And they're supposed to be arrested and deported. I mean, what is this? Trump administration says 70% of the people that they're apprehending are people who have already been convicted of crimes. That's a pretty good track record. And if the others haven't been convicted of a crime, but they're associated with somebody who's committing crime, the likelihood is they just haven't been caught or had it adjudicated yet. But even so, if they're in the country illegally, they've got to go. In fact, I don't know whether you all remember this, but I said when I was running for president, I said I am the first candidate to call for mass deportation. President Trump had not called for it when I first said that. Thank God he's doing it now. But I said, It's going to make a lot of people upset. I said that too. Boy, I wish I could go back and find some of those recordings. I said it's going to make a lot of people upset, but it's necessary because the floodgates have been opened and it's the only option we now have left. We've got to do mass deportations in order to take our country back. And President Trump is doing it. And praise God for it. And I don't have not a single bit of hatred for these illegal aliens. I don't. But I tell you what, I hate the way they've come into our country, and I hate the way they've come in here and sucked up resources and, and competed with the American people for jobs and gotten all these benefits because the Democrats could care less about our country as long as they had power. I said this, folks, this quote from John Milton's Paradise Lost, where he says that Satan, having been thrown out of heaven, says better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. And you know, that's the way these Democrats feel. They would rather preside over anarchy, preside over chaos, preside over lawlessness, preside over criminality, preside over crime, over violence and attacks on federal agents. They would rather preside over that than have to live under the rule of law and the Constitution of the United States. Because that's not what they want, because that doesn't get them where they want to go fast enough. That's why they never acknowledge us being a constitutional republic, which is what the Founding Fathers intentionally said they designed. They don't acknowledge that. We're a democracy. Our democracy. Our democracy. Our democracy. When Mrs. Powell met Ben Franklin coming out of the Constitutional Convention, she said, well, doctor, what have you given us? A monarchy or a republic? Remember his answer? A republic, if you can keep it. And the Democrats are absolutely committed to us not keeping it. They want us to be a democracy because what they want is to be able to cobble together a majority that will give them the authority to do anything they want to do. No constitutional restrictions. We think it's a good idea to disarm the American people, so we're going to take away their guns. Well, wait a minute. What about the Second Amendment? Oh, Second Amendment. Who cares? We don't think E.W. Jackson should be able to say that homosexuality is sin. We're going to censor him. We're going to cut him off. We're going to have big tech shut him up. We're going to have them close his program down. In fact, we're going to fine him and put him in jail for misgendering people. Yeah, but what about the First Amendment? Oh, we don't care about this First Amendment. Who cares? We know what's right. We don't need the First Amendment to tell us what we can't do. That's the way they really think. That's the way they really think. So their No Kings rally is a joke because they're the ones who want to be kings over the rest of us, frankly. Lastly, let me mention this whole situation with Israel. You know, nothing would please me more than to see peace in the Middle East for Israel and for the Palestinian people. You know, the psalmist said, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. They shall prosper that love her. And so I really do pray for the peace of Jerusalem. We as Christians are supposed to pray for the peace of Israel. And by the way, I don't have a problem praying for the peace of the Palestinian people, not under Hamas, because that won't happen, but under people who accept the existence of Israel and accept the human dignity of the Jewish people and accept the fact that that land was ceded to them by none other than Almighty God, and that no one has a right and no one will ever be successful in evicting them from that land. Now, on that basis, the Palestinians can live there in peace with Jews as their neighbors, or for that matter, all that land in Judea and Samaria that we now call the West Bank. All Judea and Samaria just swept in with Palestinian citizens living in peace with the people who govern that land, which is the Jewish people, the people of Israel. But you see, Hamas is never going to allow that. And while I commend President Trump for his efforts, we know what the biblical outcome is. The biblical outcome is that the whole world is ultimately going to assemble against Israel. And this may change the timetable. This may from what might otherwise have been, President Trump's efforts may slow down that process, but that's what it's going to come down to. I remember we had all these European nations declaring a Palestinian state. I mean, are you kidding me? That's like handing a gun to somebody's worst enemy and filling the chamber and saying, you can aim it at their head, and but you know, we know you won't pull the trigger. I mean, the person who does that doesn't care what happens to the person who has the gun pointed at their head. And these European nations, in my view, are anti-Semitic. That's why they declared a Palestinian state, because they don't like Jews and they don't like Israel. That's the bottom line. See, very few will say that, but let's come on. Let's just, when you side with people who have literally tried to annihilate a group of folks by whatever means they can, suicide bombers, the October 7th attack, you name it. And you say, these people should have a state. A state for what? A state to destroy the other state that really belongs there, the state of Israel? And so Hamas, since the ceasefire, since they signed on to the peace agreement, Hamas soldiers, operatives, terrorists, yeah, I don't want to call them soldiers, they're terrorists, have killed two IDF soldiers. While they have released all the living hostages, they've only released, I think it's 12 of the 28 remaining hostages, bodies that they're supposed to be releasing. And they're making excuses saying, well, we can't find them. You found them to kidnap them. You better find them to send them home. And Benjamin Netanyahu, and I trust President Trump as well, said that is unacceptable. Don't even try those excuses. We're not buying it. And President Trump has said, if they don't follow through on this peace agreement, we will obliterate them. You know what, folks? I believe that's what's going to be necessary. Because I just don't believe that Hamas can ever find it in their hearts to accept living peaceably beside Israel, to accept laying down their arms, to accept not being in control of Gaza, and to accept having to live peaceably beside Jews with them in control of the Holy Land. I don't believe they'll ever accept that. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. For the sake of Israel, as I said, and the Jewish people, and for the sake of the Palestinian people. Because the Palestinian people ultimately need to rise up and say, you know what? We don't want terrorists ruling over us. We want to have leaders who actually care about us, care about the future. We want to be able to raise our children, educate them, start businesses, have homes, live in stability, and flourish. And that's never going to happen under Hamas, because it's not in their hearts. So, again, we need to just pray for the peace of Jerusalem, believe God for the protection of the people of Israel, and watch and see what unfolds. I completely support President Trump's efforts. I don't have a whole lot of hope that it's going to work out quite the way he wants it to, because of what I know is in the hearts of these terrorists in Hamas, in Hezbollah, in the Houthis, all of them, Iran, all of them. Because there's nothing but hatred and evil and wickedness in their hearts, because they're given over to doctrines of demons, because that's what Islam is. It is doctrines of demons. And you can't get peace out of that. You can't get flourishing out of that. All you can get out of that is destruction and suicide. And they're the ones who invented the suicide bomber. I rest my case. Well, folks, as always, it's wonderful to be with you. Again, thank you all for your support. Thank you for your love. Thank you for your prayers. I appreciate you so very, very much. And please be praying for me. If you want to help me at Stand, go to standamerica.us. That's standamerica.us. Pray, volunteer, and give. Those are three ways that you can help us. Pray, volunteer, and give. And God bless each and every one of you for all the support that you give to American Family Radio and the American Family Association of Organizations. God bless you. I love you. I'm praying for you. And in the meantime, you know what to do. Stand up, step up, speak up, and refuse to back up. Because we cannot be defeated if we will not quit. Because we are on God's side. God bless everybody.